Session number 23370, Reel 7.
This is the fourth reel of a taped interview with Peter Gray in his home in Perth, Western Australia, on the 2nd of the 4th, 2002, for the Imperial War Museum in London, and the interviewer is John Bannister. Peter, we've been talking about your rescue, and you've spoken about the chap who sang Begin the Begin. How long were you on board that ship for?
Only a matter of days. I didn't keep us on there long, mainly because of the difficulty of transport, food, and of course there was quite a lot of wounded people on board who needed medical attention, and we never had any, quite obviously, and the ship accommodation didn't have any either, and there was some pretty bad cases, people with shattered legs and that sort of thing that obviously needed a lot better attention than could be given in such primitive conditions. So that didn't keep us long.
How were you coping with the general sort of thought of what had gone on and basically keeping yourself positive?
Well, as I remember it, it was mainly the fact of conversation and some speculation as to what would happen, and of course what had happened after we had been sunk in regards to the fleet that we had run into and decimated, as to what had happened there and where what the general situation was. It was mere speculation because we had no means of getting any information at all. And of course the Jap crew wasn't very forthcoming. All that you would get would be from various individuals that there was a big boom boom and that was about it. The words all finish, that was about the sum of the conversation, so you could only read into that whatever you liked.
The Perth had handled herself pretty well up until the time she'd been struck by the torpedoes.
That's right.
Quite a lot of damage. Were you able to glean later on the success of the Perth?
Yes, so to some degree, because we had the navigating officer on board with us. This was on the Somdong Maru, and he was questioned, and they were very keen to know the name of the battle cruiser that we had had with us, or the battleship that we had with us, and what its name was, because they weren't familiar with any ships of a big nature such as that to be in the vicinity. And of course when we and the Houston had got stuck into them, of course everything was a target, so although there was a lot of it, everything was a target, everything that moved in the water was a target, and so long as Houston stayed pretty close to us, everything was a target, and consequently we did enormous damage, and they were quite shocked at the amount of damage that had been done when we only confessed to being a light cruiser. The Houston, she was a heavy cruiser, manning 8-inch guns, which of course are very effective, particularly at very short range like these were, because 18 shells pounding into things like destroyers or troop ships, that's pretty pretty effective. And consequently, they lost quite heavily in that regard. But that was the that gave us some indication that yes, the loss had been very heavy as far as they were concerned, and we had been upgraded to something like a battleship. So that was an indication to us just how well we had gone.
What are the thoughts of those blokes who hadn't made it on from the Perth and the Houston?
Hadn't made it.
Were lost.
Our thoughts of them. Oh well, of course, that was very difficult for us because we all had mates who had gone, and some had gone in pretty horrific circumstances, such as when you are locked in an area such as we had been down below, and everybody else is in the same boat, so to speak, so that every area is watertight, and it's all managers in the event of action to control damage and control water gushing into a ship, that sort of thing. If it's only a section and it's blocked off, then you can cope with it. And of course, some of these circumstances, where there was torpedo damage and later on gunnery damage, which jammed things shut. And of course, that's a pretty horrific situation.
You'd been looking at possibly getting ashore, but even getting ashore wasn't guaranteed of safety, as I understand.
Crikey, Dave. As it turned out, there were some who got ashore and were attacked by natives, by the Javanese natives. But we found out later that in the Banton area, where all this action had taken place, or it's adjacent to where all the action had taken place, the natives there were particularly notorious for having uprisings, attacking Dutch people and white people, etc., and doing an enormous amount of damage. And some of our blokes came in with cuts across their back and arms and so forth, cuts of 10 and 12 inches long, put there by parangs and knives, and because these people had, when they saw there was only a few of them, came and attacked them with knives and parangs and like machetes, that sort of thing. Consequently, some of our blokes had some pretty bad wounds, but we never caught up to them until later on. But yeah, that was a problem, particularly for those that landed. Not that we knew about that beforehand, but when you're in the water, any sort of land looks pretty good. But I guess if you're getting chased by somebody with a bloody great knife, you're not too happy about that either.
So you're on board the ship. What was the next move for you?
We were taken ashore, and this was where perhaps we started to run into the army, and they were sort of a fairly nervous type. We were loaded onto trucks, just open trucks, and just had to stand on the back and hang on to each other, this style of thing, with a couple of guards on the back, and we were driven into this town called Serang, and we weren't quite sure what was going to happen. The natives at that time were fairly neutral. There was no, didn't appear to be any animosity towards us or towards the Japs. These people appeared to be fairly independent and didn't want to be involved too much with anybody other than their own people. But when we arrived in Serang, some of us were put into the picture theatre, and the others went round to the jail. They were put in the local jail.
Can you describe to us the situation with you in relation to the picture theatre?
Well, the picture theatre, it was a picture theatre in Nome. It had a screen on one wall. It had no seats. The local population, when they went to see the pictures, of course, did the usual thing and just squatted where they were. The floor was tiled. It was a tiled floor, like stone tiles. And there were some steps in it, every 6 or 8 feet, something like that. Might have been a bit more, because there were two lots of people would lay down toe to toe. So there must have been more, there must have been about 12 feet, I guess. There were rows and rows of these people, there were, there would have been at least 200 in the place, and there was what would have been a or a dress circle, as far as we were concerned, with the was above us, and that's where the Jap guards were. They were up on the on this area up top, with one of the biggest bloody machine guns I've ever seen in my life, up there with it already loaded, etc. And I think this nervousness was quite evident then, because this bloke was sitting behind the machine gun the whole time. Well, in the state we were in, we were hardly likely to do too much of a runner, this sort of thing. But again, we had the sick people there, and those who were wounded. Plus we had quite a few Englishmen. Some had been trying to sail down to Australia, and there were some British soldiers. I'm not quite sure where they came from, but they finished up in the theatre with us. And of course, on the door, at the entry door, there was that was a man by guards, etc. And we had a native doctor who came in each day to do dressings and this sort of thing, and our own doctor, who was still with us, because once he got his hands on some gear and equipment and medicines, he was also very much bound up in all these patients. And of course, there is a lot of suffering from bad eyes, oil, problems with oil, and that was they were the immediate problems. Plus, that we had everybody had to be fed. There was no outside food coming in, and they gave us a bag of rice, or bags of rice, and we also had a cook with us, one of our chief cooks, and he had was given a thing we called a wajon, which is like a big fry pan style of thing, an enormous thing, and if you're going to cook rice for a couple of hundred blokes, you've got to be able to have something to cook it in. But it was only on a wood fryer, and of course that's pretty difficult to make it go right. And we had no utensils. We didn't have mess kits or dixies or plates or anything. So you were handed a handful of rice in a bowl, and it was the most god-awful blasted effort I've ever seen in my life. It was sticky, and it was only rice. Well, if there's nothing in the rice, and it was all white rice, which is doesn't have a great deal of goodness in it, and it was very difficult to get it down, but of course by that time you realise that if you were going to stay alive and you were going to be involved with this for any length of time, man, you've got to eat. So that was the, you put up with it and you stuffed it down your throat, whether it made you sick or not, or that was another question. But that proved to be quite a big problem. The cooking arrangements for that number of people. In between time, we found that that's right, in the afternoons we got this ball of rice about lunchtime each day, and in the evening we got a small loaf of bread from the Japanese got it from the local baker, and he brought in these loaves of bread, only a bit more than just a roll, that was all. But we found that some of the pommie sailors, etc., they had money. We had nothing, and if you went to them, they would buy the bread off you, and in turn, there were people going outside bringing in water, a water party, and they'd go past the local shop. And in going past the local shop, the Japs would turn a blind eye while you went in and got some whatever was inside. And this ingenuity that we've been talking about earlier on came to the fore because we had an outbreak of diarrhea. Well, it's in very cramped circumstances. It's not very pleasant, and it's not. It's also very contagious. So we worked out that. This mate of mine, he had this diarrhea, so we sold some bread, got some money, and got this bloke to get us some, what was it now? It was a cake from the, that's right, it was a ginger cake, because the ginger was critical to what we were doing. And we knew that the ginger has an effect on diarrhoea, and that's something that settles everything down. And charcoal, of course, will also act as a binding agent. So we got this ginger cake, and Took it out to the fire and burnt it almost to a crisp, then made him eat it. And fortunately, it cured his diarrhoea. But that was the sort of thing that you had to do. You had to improvise the whole time to keep on top of all these problems that were occurring. Because the dysentery, of course, broke out. And there were some cases of malaria. And there were things that were occurring that we hadn't been aware of up until that time, and that was the lack of salt. Because our food has, the normal food that you get in the Navy has a fair bit of salt in it one way or another. And then if you're deprived of salt, then of course you have problems. Because you black out. And we found that when you lay down, well, there wasn't much else to do except lay down. When you sat up, suddenly you would black out. So if you went to stand up, you had to have something to hang on to while your head cleared. And this was quite a problem because blokes would fall over and hurt themselves. If you fall over in a fight and there's only stone tiles down on for you to fall on, you can come an awful whopper. So this was something that we worked out very quickly, that if you're going to sit up, you do it carefully. And that they were just some of the things that occurred. But our chief buffer, was the chief basin's mate, he dug up a book from around the place, and he said, "Well, righto, you blokes, you sit around and I'll read you this book, just for something to do, occupy your mind, that sort of thing," which was a very good thought on his part. But the book that he found was a book called Come and Get It, and it was all about a lumber camp up in Canada with these people eating these enormous meals. Of course, there couldn't have been anything worse than that to read about, but nevertheless old Mac kept on with it and read this damn book to us. But it was a bit of a trial at the time. But we also had an escape. A bloke by the name of Laszlo. He was an electrician from on board, and this area we were in, apart from the theatre building itself, there was a small yard which was a triangular shape. And I suppose it, from memory, it would have occupied the long side of the triangle would have been about 20-25 yards, I guess, and the short bottom side, if you like, was would have been about 10 or 12 yards. So it wasn't a very big area. But running right down that side was a wall, a brick wall, which would have been, from memory, 8 to 10 feet high. Quite a thing to get over if you want to do that sort of thing. But he did it, got over the wall, and suddenly, of course, in the counts, and these counts were frequent, they would count you any time of the day, this eternal cry of tanko, tanko, and you had to line up and all be counted. And of course, we always had one of our senior people go around with them and do the count, because counting people is quite a difficult problem. You've only got to miss one, and suddenly you've got a variation in the numbers, and they were very panicky about it. And anyway, came this this count, and one bloke was missing. They went over it again, and went over it again, went over it again, about four or five times. Counted everybody. Everybody had to sit dead still. You weren't allowed to go to the toilet. You weren't allowed to do this, that, or the other. And they worked out, right, one bloke's escaped. He's gone. So the machine gun was sort of rattled around a little bit, and lots of noises were made, and one of the Jap officers came in, and of course an officer in the Japanese army, such as a lieutenant or a captain, is regarded as sort of just this side of God. He made noises, and he swung a sword around, and he made all sorts of threats and this sort of thing. Anyway, they caught our friend Lazlet and took him around to the jail and put him in solitary round there, and we're going to cut off his head or do something. And the lights went out. So of course our Mr. Lazlet, being an electrician, being a very inventive sort of bloke, fixed up their lights and put it all back into gear again, and they said, thanks very much, we needn't stay in the solitary anymore. And he was walking around as free as a bloody bird. And so that was quite an episode as far as we were concerned. But
how were you communicating with the Japanese guards?
Mainly you learn very quickly some of the important words. Benjo, you want to go to the toilet, that sort of thing. They had lots of words that didn't mean very much, like kura, and kura was meant anything, you know, it means come here or go there, or you, or you know, hey you, or that sort of thing. Was a sort of a very gruff command of some sort. But yes, you learned all the critical words, you know, mizu for some water and that sort of thing. You can become very inventive as far as miming is concerned, making your point. Some of the scary things were, of course, was trying to understand what they were saying. They had some odd words of English, but of course they weren't always indicative of what they were after. But yes, we had quite a lot of problems with that, but generally you could make yourself understood, and you tried very hard to be or to understand them, because if you happened to do the wrong thing as far as they were concerned, well, you might finish up with a clap around here with a rifle butt, which didn't help very much.
And were you able to reason with them at all about things like food or medical facilities?
The doctor with the connivance of the local native doctor, was able to get quite a lot of reasonable stuff, you know, as far as medicine was concerned. And he, a lot of the Japs also had a smattering of Malaysian or Javanese, any of those Indonesian languages. So there was, they could do some of that. As regards destination, what was going to happen to you, or want more food or that sort of thing, that was very very much a matter of mime and sign language of some sort, plus a few words thrown in that you picked up, and those sorts of things. But yes, we found it was quite a problem right at the jump, because we had no no knowledge of Japanese at all.